Welcome to Holden Village. Tonight, in the fireside room, Barbara Sittler will be speaking about meaning and values. What is life worth, anyway? So, let's listen in on Barbara.
I could come up with the ultimate meanings and values that make life worthwhile, or that fail to make life worthwhile. So I see this as really a work in progress for all of us, and maybe we can all talk. I sort of like the fact that there's a table in here, that it can be a round table kind of talk. I have some things that I'd like to just sort of throw out to start the conversation with. But I by no means feel that I have a handle on this in any definitive way. But it occurred to me that it would be a good idea to raise these questions, this issue, in the context of thinking about the end of our life, how we want to deal with it, and what aging means, because sort of implicit and underneath all of the decisions we make and the way we view those who are older than we are, who are in the aging process now, or in senior citizens, or as we think about ourselves as we're aging, children, family, friends, there is underlying the big question of what life is really worth anyway. And for example, when we think about putting together a living will and getting advanced directives, we're talking about what don't we want to have happen to us? You know, we don't want to have extraordinary measures. Like for myself, I don't want extraordinary measures taken at the end of my life to keep me going so that I'm hooked up on machines. I just don't want that. Why? Because there are some values that I hold very dear, and that would violate the whole value that I have toward autonomy and dignity and being able to care for myself, to be able to leave a memory for those in my family and friends behind. I want my life to have a meaning, and I want my death to have a meaning. And in some ways, making sure that I have taken care of articulating how I want the end of my life to proceed has a meaning in it right there. So just on that example, I think we can find a lot of implicit meanings in the decisions that we make and the way we look at age and end of life. And I think that all too frequently, it's all too common that we don't really lift up what those values are and what those meanings are. And then as we approach times of great crisis or loneliness or diminishment, we have to look for those meanings, we have to cling to them. We have to really help them become the cornerstones of our continued existence. And yet, because we're not used to talking about it, we're not used to thinking about it, that's not as easy for us to do as it might be. As people who are drawn together intentionally into communities of caring, I think also it's important that we start to say, well, now, let's see, what does really mean something to me? What are the values that I hold most dear? And I myself find very thin comfort in saying, well, one of the things that gives my life meaning is the notion that I am a child of God, that I am loved by God and I'm never abandoned by God. That sounds good, but it doesn't really mean anything to me. A lot of times when I feel alone or challenged or deeply in despair, I gotta know what does that functionally mean to me. So it's with that sort of underlying sort of speculation, some reflections, that's why I think this is a good topic to bring up. I also think that when we really start to look at what has meaning and value for life, we are there's a dualism in our society that promotes some things which, you know, that on reflection maybe we wouldn't agree with. Wealth, success, notoriety, even negative notoriety. I, I, I'm been telling everybody all week that my favorite reading material, bar none, is People Magazine. I just love that magazine. And it's a terrible thing because it doesn't make any difference whether you've done anything good or bad. I just want to, you know, you just got to do something to make People Magazine. And I love sort of looking through it. Oh, look at that. Oh, wow. But I mean, our culture really promotes that. And I would, of course, say in reflective and dignified moments that I am looking for what is the core, at the core of each and every person. What's genuinely them, not this sort of fancy flu-flu. But whatever it is, $1.39, $2.39 at the pick checkout counter, I deliberately go in a long line at the grocery store so I can read it and not have to buy it. Because I'm a student, I'm on a budget. But, you know. And so I see that in myself a lot, and presumably as I'm in graduate school and doing ministry and pastoral care and issues in death and dying and social service administration, I would have more closely in my field of vision a sensitivity to what real meaning and value is. But I don't. Frequently I don't. I also think, earlier in the week I talked about the difference between, or the sort of the false dichotomy that's set up between hospice care and physician-assisted suicide. What I think is underlying that whole issue frequently is, again, a question of meaning and value. If we see meaning and value in our continued existence in relationship with others, and as sort of as life brings different challenges to us, as we are encountering or encountered by grief or suffering or despair or joy, but in this case it wouldn't too much be that, it's the meanings that we attach to those things that are going to say, I want Jack Kevorkian here because my life is meaningless. Or I want to go to a hospice. There's still meaning in what my life is. I don't like what's happening, maybe. I don't like that I'm slipping away. I don't like that I'm going in the dying process. But my life, even so, has meaning. It has meaning for me. It has value. It has meaning for those with whom I'm engaged. I don't want to stop it because I can't control it. There's a different set of meanings there. And I think also, probably most fundamentally, that just talking about meaning and values is in itself a value. That in the questioning, particularly together, when we can make use of each other's experiences and different takes on the question, there is a value in human beings who are each one of us owners of different stories and different circumstances. It's valuable for us to come together and lift out, reflect on what those circumstances, those stories, our different histories bring to mind when we think of meaning. It is important not only for each and every one of us individually, but as a society and as a group of people who interact with different generations, different parts of our own family, different parts of our human community. It's important that we think about these things and that we make overt and make explicit what is implicit. I think it helps, I know for myself, it helps me determine behavior. It helps me set priorities. It helps me work through good times and bad times in different ways. So that being said, and recognizing that because we are all different people, things that we come up with are going to be very diverse, I want to go back to these lists. And I'm going to just tell you like a little scenario. And as I read along, I'll give you a little instructions. This is not the happiest of scenarios, but I think it kind of works. I want you to imagine, does everybody have a pencil? Okay, or a pen. I want you to imagine that you're 65 years old. You've been employed in a meaningful career all of your life, and you've just retired. with that retirement means a radical change in your life. It also means a significant but not catastrophic change in your income. You will now be making less money. Now I want you to strike off the one item on that list you can do without. Can't do without any of them, right?
Well,
okay, everybody done that? All right. Because of this diminishment in your income, and because your two children who used to live in town with your grandchildren have moved far away, and because you're not as young and spry as you once were, or the arthritis is becoming somewhat problematic, you have decided, you and your spouse have decided to move into a retirement home, sell your house, pretty much divide up all of your possessions, not all of them, you're going to keep some of them, but your new place to live will be much smaller. You're going to divide them up between your two children who live out of state, and you will move into a retirement home. Now give up another thing.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
That was
even
possible.
Oh, that was part of the eight, okay. I didn't anticipate that. Okay, you've lived in the retirement home for 3 years. It's okay. Some things you don't care for about it too much, but it's in general all right. Unfortunately, your spouse has become quite ill and dies. And this makes a real big change in your life, tremendously. Strike off another one. Had problems with your eyes for a while, but now even the bifocals with and reading glasses, everything, are not really helping. You can get around. Books on tape are a lot easier these days than even large print books, but you can get around. But you can't really drive any longer, so your driver's license has been revoked. What that means is that you've got to sell your car, but it also means that you're not going to be attending church council meetings. You're not going to be on the board of the two volunteer organizations that have been meaningful to you. And your life has really closed down because you've come to really look on those as social occasions as well as business occasions. And your social sphere has narrowed down dramatically. Cross up another one. On your annual visit to your doctor's discovered what looks like a tumor. Don't want to alarm you, but it's a good idea to have that investigated. You have to admit you've been feeling a little slow, a little tired. Your appetite's not what it once was. You just figure it's because life isn't so interesting anymore. You don't like to cook for yourself. The food downstairs is not to your taste. Strike off another one. Okay, if the lump is biopsied and it is malignant, so you're going to have surgery. You have to check into the hospital. You've made arrangements at the retirement community to have somebody look after things. There's not really that much to look after, but you've made arrangements. Your cat is going next door to the lady next door, and you're going to be in the hospital for several weeks going through surgery and recuperation. Strike off another one. Oh, and it's malignant, by the way. Did I say that?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. The doctors, the team, your oncology team has decided that the best thing that they can provide for you now is radiation and chemo, which they do. They're both extremely debilitating. It extends your stay in the hospital for a very long time. But it's not, you're not bound, it's not doing what they'd hoped. You're not bouncing back. It's pretty clear that it's time to plan for an end, which will be 6, 12, maybe even 18 months. Your friends are in the same boat, pretty much. They don't have a lot of cars to come around. The people that you used to hang out with at the church and service organizations haven't been stepping by that much. So I guess they're too busy. It's just what happens. You know that this is pretty much the end of your life that you're seeing. Your kids come to visit when they can, but they're out of state. It means a pretty much of a burden, and you don't want them to come too often because you can't stand what that's doing to their finances, what it's doing to their home life, and you don't know what to say anyway. Strike off the next one. Now, that's as far as I'm going to go with it. What I wonder is, if for those of you who feel like telling us what that last item is or what the value that it represented to you is, and or if was any surprise to you what you found you put down as the thing that you really didn't want to live without, I would be interested in hearing about it. If any of you want to share that.
My baptism.
Your baptism. Oh, that's great. That's very interesting. Were some of the other things
similar? Mine is similar, and it wasn't a surprise at all. It was my faith in God and Jesus Christ and the Holy Spirit. And to me, that's the very core of my being. I can't imagine that facing death without that feeling of death relationship.
So for you, were any of the things that you struck off a surprise in the way in which they
were?
In
the order that I did?
Mm-hmm. Do you think, oh boy, I thought I was more attached to that than I was?
No, I guess the order wasn't a real surprise to me. I guess I was put against the wall in striking the relationship with my son. I mean, I didn't ever want to do that. But, I mean, what you said was,
if they were out of town, they couldn't come see me anyway.
Didn't like what they were doing to their finances. I mean, but in reality, I know deep in my head, or hopefully, that it wouldn't really be struck anyway at the same time. Didn't have family at that end, that would be very, very hard, and yet I know there are a lot of people that don't.
Any of the others?
I was so encouraged. I had put my mind there, faith in God, and because I want to be in control. The very end.
So your mind was...
I'd like to be able to make those decisions myself. The hardest thing was to
Cross off
family, which was the next to last one until she said what she said. So I had put mine, but I want to be able to... I would not like to not be able to make the final decisions.
So, but you did cross that off?
No, that was my...
Your mind?
My mind was left.
Uh-huh.
With... along with faith in God.
So that you know that if you had your mind, that would...
Right.
Yeah, that was a good choice.
I don't want to say what one is colder, but my second to my last was a surprise, reading books. I hung on there and crossed off a lot of other things that I thought would have been.
But you lost your sight already before you.
No, but you didn't have to take
it. I figured even if that happened, I would still listen to this.
Books on tape. Yeah.
That was my next one.
Well, mine was my sister. I found that I couldn't, that if I didn't have a relationship with someone in this world that I really loved, that would, I struck off the other relationships, but finally, I have a very strong sense of getting meaning out of relationship. And if I didn't have that, I sort of felt like, what's the point of going on? Maybe I'd like to say that implicit was the sense that, well, if I were dying, I would be going to God, but I don't think I can get away with that. I think it would be more honest to say that I focus more on the here and now, and I see myself, when I think of myself, I feel so much in time that it's in relationship. And if I didn't have that kind of one relationship that I knew I could trust somebody and who trusted me and that I made a difference to, that there was nothing else I wanted as much as that.
It sounds like that's how God then communicates to you, through relationships. And so, you know, that's as if God is still there, mm-hmm. the relationship with your sisters. You haven't really crossed God.
Thank you. I like that. That's very good. Yeah, I gave up garlic earlier on, but garlic and butter is real good.
We didn't have any choice, but when you told us spouse died, we had to knock off the relationship with more.
Yeah.
Whether we wanted to or not.
It happened several times. Cows.
Yeah.
Why?
Also, let alone.
Cows.
Yeah.
And the sight was gone myself.
Did most of you focus on like not on possessions, but on relationships?
Yeah, or on positions that represent certain kinds of things. Like, I drive an electric car, have no gasoline-powered car at all.
You have an electric car?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I got to talk to you about that later.
Yes, but there's, and it's for the reason I just got sick of polluting. I do it as a bonus, you know, for my own.
Uh-huh.
So that's why I'm still there in the top eight. Mm-hmm.
The electric car. Great.
None of mine involved things, but skills in four categories.
Yeah, my work was one that was.
And the one that stayed on top was also baptism.
Huh. That's interesting.
That's very interesting.
It's good because most of mine was in the spiritual side.
Uh-huh.
A few relationships, but the top priority was being born again, which is the Bible says you must be born again. You don't want to see the kingdom of God. I like to see the kingdom of God. So we want to lose that. And baptism is part of it.
I never would have thought of that. That's really, I'm going to ask a big question. I don't know if any. So, what do you think this says about the values that you hold, as opposed to the values that you find yourself surrounded with? And do you find yourself in conflict?
But I feel strongly supported by the people around me too, in holding them, in putting my family first.
Uh huh.
Essentially, like-minded people around me second.
But that's something that you've intentionally done. You've created an environment.
But I come from a spiritual tradition that strongly encourages that kind of introspection that says, you know, figure this out as part of being a member of this group.
See, now it seems to me that that's underlying what we are to do. We are called to do. well, we as the human race, and then I suppose we here in Holden, though, I'm assuming that most people come here because they want to sort of think these things through a little bit and be with like-minded people for whom similar values are embodied in the way we eat and the way we, you know, use our resources around here. But I know I find myself in conflict with those things all the time. And I question a lot. In order to do what I do well, I have to do well professionally. I have to make somebody a lot of money, because then they will want to have me as their chef. This was when I was a chef. And they will pay me to do it, and they will seek me out. It's not so much the money, it's the note,
reputation.
The reputation that I would bring. And so it's very difficult to then talk about what I do as an art and as something that enriches me and is a gift when I use it to promote. And I think there are many ways in which the values that we see as human beings in this society sort of are not really coming counter to the values that we're expressing around here, but are somehow a different angle that can pervert what it is we want and spin us in directions that we can't quite catch on to. And it's very hard to center ourselves back again. I think as a corporate church, we also...
That's what the church is for. To support us in living our lives in as godly a way as we can, given the situation we find ourselves in.
Well, that's just perfect. Now, how well does the church do that?
Well, some do better than others.
Yeah.
I'm very satisfied with what my church is.
Now, are you Lutheran or?
No. Religious Society of Friends.
Oh, great.
But that doesn't mean we can never stop working at it either.
Well, I suspect that's probably why it works, is because it's constantly being worked at. Well, you know, when I get the Lutheran every month, I say, how many people here are Lutheran? Okay. Is everybody here a member of some church group, denomination?
Not a denomination,
no. A church
independent
that's...
Independent church.
But does it have a are you... So you're a member of a church?
Right, of course.
Okay, and then do you give money into the church, and then it's, all right, so you're in some corporate structure of some sort.
Right.
Excuse me. This roughage day, yes. I got to tell you, even for me, it's like.
How many ate supper tonight?
I ate a little bit.
I thought it was really good, but. I've been thinking it was really good for quite a while. I But you know, like as a church, is most churches gather together to promote these values that we hold as fundamental to being responsible, to sort of personifying the sense of what we are created to be and what really gives meaning and value. But frequently, I think that doesn't work out in how we make decisions about ourselves in the here and now. You know, in the corporate, how does the church make decisions? I remember several years ago, there was a big question about the pension fund. Where were we investing the funds from the Lutheran Church to, you know, for the pension fund? Well, it was a big question of values right there, because a lot of it was in South Africa. And then there was a huge crisis about whether the financial secretary of the National Lutheran Church, where his responsibility lay. He said, I have a responsibility for the fiscal health of these funds. I have to make the greatest return I can on them. That's my obligation. I can do no less. Well, yeah. Yeah? maybe not. And so, you know, I know, now where I put money away every year in an IRA, because I have an obligation to take care of myself and to, you know, not be a burden on, I don't have children, I don't have a husband, I'm, somebody in my family is going to end up with the problem of taking care of old Barbara if I don't do something about it. And I don't want them to do that. I mean, for a lot of reasons, I don't want to do that. But who's, where are my IRA funds going? And how do I do that? And is that, I mean, there's a, these are not contradictory goals, these are not contradictory values, but, you know, they're hitting each other sort of in funny ways. And that's sort of the underlying reason that I think it's also, one of the underlying reasons why I think it's important to talk about these issues of value and meaning in terms of how we live our lives. If we assume that our lives are filled with meaning, then how do we concretely live those lives? Any of you have, I mean, does this make sense?
I think you gave at least two examples that really has a common denominator, that's money, and that's the most challenging for most people, especially as it impacts work, but, you know, how we spend our time. And fortunately, I like my job, and I'm happy at what I'm doing, and I feel really, that's one of my greatest possessions and gifts. But I know that's not true for a lot of people. And I also have the luxury of being married to someone who also is working, and because between two of us, we make a pretty good income. I mean, it's not huge, but it's more than enough to provide what we need. And therefore, we are able, therefore on my list, a lot of things fit because the money fits. But I know that it could be otherwise very easily. Mm-hmm. So that's, that for me, I think the money issue is where the problem with values comes up a lot of times.
Yeah. I also think that the problems with values, I'm sort of trying to winnow it down. If for several of the people here, you said baptism, faith in God, you said implicitly the same thing. You're helping me, and implicitly that's the same thing for me too. And so there's the sense that life, that my life has meaning because it has meaning in the eyes of God. That's a wonderful thing to say. It's a wonderful thing to believe. And yet, we don't act as if everyone else's life has that kind of meaning. I think of some of the, for example, one of the big issues confronting the Lutheran Church right now is the statement on sexuality and homosexuality, particularly. Some of the other churches are dealing with ordination of women. How do we put both of these values, or these, how do we take the value that we see as being loved by God and being cherished by God through baptism, as you said, or through a faith and a loving back and the kingdom of God that we want to be born again and new into? How do we justify that meaning that our life has with a stance that deprives others of that meaning? And
sometimes it just takes an honest facing the fact that we're not living up to our highest ideals.
Yeah. But I think that it may help sometimes to look at the controversies that afflict us as people of faith, or as a church body, or as a society, and say that we are, as we examine what life is worth, and what our values are, and what our meanings are.
Well, I think if we look at judge not lest you be judged, you know, that's what the scripture says. So regardless of the lifestyle, we're not to judge. That's the one thing she's referring to.
Now, can you do that? I find it very hard myself to do that.
I mean, we all have our own ideas, and where you get them is, of course, from the scriptures, you know, what's right and what's wrong. Well, that's what you have to go by, because that's what we're going to be judged by anyway, the scriptures. And if we don't live up to the scriptures, then we're not living up to God's expectation of us. So I can't say, well, you know, I'm to love everybody. And I can't say I don't love everybody. I dislike some people. And you know, there's a fine line there between love and dislike. So it's kind of, you know, it's difficult. It really is. Well, I mean, when you say, well, this is right and this is wrong, well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, you know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of interpretations too, and also we have to forget that we are human.
Right.
And we always will be, so we are not perfect. So we have to accept the fact that that's reality. When you try.
So does that change your mind at all about what what
really
the value of human life really is?
Not really, because I think we all basically know what we should do. But because we're human, I don't think we can always do it. And so that's why I would always like to have my mind so I can always continue to use it and interpret the best way I know how, which may be something entirely different from someone else, and it's okay to be different.
What if you didn't have your mind? That's would your life still have value?
I don't think so. I saw my mother have Alzheimer's and there was nothing there.
But it wasn't, I mean, she didn't go from being fine to having Alzheimer's in one day, right? That's a,
no,
that's a gradual process.
And it was long term and very hard on the family. And it was, but at a certain point when there was no way of communicating at all, and like I said, the relationships were gone, there was no way she knew who I was, there's no way I could get through to her. And so it was like, I kept saying, why am I going to visit her? She doesn't mind anyway. And then I began to think, oh, but she may know. I don't really know that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was visiting the nursing home at least twice a week and thinking, why am I coming? Finally, I said to the nurses, can I do something while I'm here? And so I ended up bringing my sewing machine and sewing for some of the other patients, and they started looking forward to it. And my mother sometimes would come to me and sit down beside me as if she knew who I was. Well, I began to think maybe there's something there because she taught me to sew, and maybe that there was something there that she was recognizing. I don't know this, but I kept trying. But then there came a point where there was absolutely nothing there. There was no communication with anyone, even the nurses or anyone. There was just nothing as far as communicating. She couldn't say even words that would come out in any kind of sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so eventually, you know, she just went into coma, which was, and the doctors at that point said to me, do you want us to do anything? We said, no. And
well, if she had not gone into a coma, would you have said, let's just put her to death?
No, I wouldn't have, because I didn't know what she wanted.
Uh-huh. And did life, but did, see, I'm trying to push you on this a little bit. Yeah, because, as heck don't have, you know, answers on this, but, you know,
for her, I wouldn't have known, but for myself, I do. If I had gotten to that point, I would not have wanted to continue. But the one thing about that, such as or people who have had strokes, they do say, I mean, I've heard this said that we don't really know how much they understand, so therefore that's something that seems to be a little bit unknown.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they understand but can't communicate with you, so therefore I don't think I would have.
So it sounds like life had meaning as long as she could receive something. Even because it sounds like as long as you thought perhaps she could be getting something from you, even mm-hmm. if she was unable to give to you,
yeah,
but if she could get something from you,
yeah.
that was meaningful.
Yeah.
that it was the relation, that it was very much the relationship aspect of it, rather than, I mean, I would probably argue that you could say that someone's mind is pretty much not there, and yet they are able to receive tenderness and warmth and you know, sort of the...
That didn't even seem to be there.
Uh-huh.
There was no response to any kind of touching or anything like that either. But I don't know. It's a lot of unknown here, so I like probably can't even answer your question.
Yeah, I have to wonder too in your situation if maybe you couldn't say if her life still had meaning, but you were not comfortable making a decision taking her or ending her life, whether or not there was still meaning in it. Just let. Because you didn't feel like, well, I guess there was still meaning because you wanted it to, whatever you did, to be consistent with what she would want. So that it was still sort of reacting to your mother, even if she wasn't there. It was what you were imagining your mother would want. Does that make sense?
Yes.
What you would have wanted if you were in your place.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's the only thing most of us can do.
I guess this is why I put my mind first. Because I would not have wanted to be that way.
Yeah.
But if I hadn't had that experience, I might have answered that differently. If I hadn't seen that.
Uh-huh.
So my values might not have been the same tonight.
That's why I think a living will might come in handy, you know, for people who don't know what their loved one wants.
Well, I remember
this is all spelled out.
Yeah.
Saying to me was she said, don't ever let me go and live with any of you and be a burden on you. That's all she ever said, but she never had a living will. And when she did live with us for 3 or 4 years off and on with my 2 other sisters. And to the point where we were taking care of her off and on in different places. And every time we moved her, it got worse. And finally the doctor said, you're trying to be very dutiful daughters, but you're not helping your mother one bit. And
keep her in one place, essentially.
In one place.
Yeah.
And so she was... at that point, we were moving to Maine, so she went. We were the ones that were really closer. We took her with us, and we were very close in a home where she could get acquainted and used to it, and not have to move again, which was hard to do. One sister didn't want to do it because she didn't want to go through this.
Yeah.
But it worked. It was a lovely arrangement, and but she got worse and worse. Yeah, I'm sure everybody's been through similar experiences, but it does make a difference on how you answer things, these questions for yourself, depending on the experiences you have with other people.
Because the value is then what?
It's a quality of life.
Yeah, we'll say that.
And that depends on what you mean by quality of life, and I think everybody has a different...
I wonder actually how many people would have a different response. Talking about the ultimate value is to be able to live in a way that it has quality. Not the ultimate value, but in terms of living, while we are living, what makes living, what are those values that make it worth living, without which it is no longer worth living? Now you can say your mind, but it could also be the ability to experience one another.
Mm-hmm.
The experience to be conscious of something, or to maybe not even conscious, but to experience in one way or another, whether it's through touch or you know, some way of perceiving our createdness, to put it in a sort of a spiritual
sense. Well, you
talked
about your mother and the pain she went through, but she was aware of all this happening, wasn't she?
She was until close to the end. My mother had Alzheimer's.
My mother had no pain, and so it was harder almost to I keep saying she had a physical illness, I probably could handle it better than the...
Yeah, my mom didn't have a whole lot of pain.
Yeah, so...
No, she was more, she was doing contracting and started injuring herself through that, but her physical illness really was not painful at all, which was very strange, because then we couldn't say, well, there's a clear-cut thing here. The value then is going to be placed on removing suffering. It wasn't easy to say whether she was suffering or not.
That's what Kevorkian said.
Well, I mean, what do you think about Dr. Jack?
Well, I don't know. oh yeah, I haven't really thought about that. But that's something that's a 20th century type thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's ever been brought up. But, I don't know. That's almost like committing suicide in a way. There's certainly better things than suicide. I mean, natural death is what God, I think, is wanting us to do, not to commit our lives willfully.
Yeah, but natural death is almost entirely out of our reach these days. Because if you see natural death in the sense of, well, when you get older, something will come and you'll just die of this thing or that thing or the other thing. We can intervene in any number of ways, and usually do. Oh, you don't have to die. I mean, it wasn't pneumonia. My dad told me that pneumonia is the old man's friend. Because that's what does you in. You get to a certain age and a certain weakness, and then you get pneumonia, and that takes you off pretty quickly. Nobody has to die of pneumonia these days, and few do. Antibiotics will go right in there. Well, then,
yeah, but okay. In a few years, antibiotics aren't going to do the trick either.
It begins to get that way again.
Mm-hmm. What?
But pneumonia will do it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because it's becoming more and more virulent.
Yeah.
There's a woman that I've been visiting for 2 years now who has advanced stages of emphysema and gets pneumonia frequently and has been on all sorts of medication. And I'll tell you, I mean, maybe it will prolong your life. Maybe you'll still die of it in 3 years. But I mean, those 3 years are awful. I mean, she's in her mind is really very active. We have good conversations, but she is in a great deal of pain, and it doesn't seem right. It really doesn't seem right that she's suffering and has been suffering for so long, and is so alert to all of it, you know.
Has she made that decision? Has she made this decision?
Well, yeah, she has. So I guess that's...
Well, then there's the question of the value and meaning of suffering.
Yeah.
It's apparently the scale is still, there's still enough value and meaning in it or despite it.
Yeah.
That life is worth continuing on.
And then there's another facet too that... we've had cases where the doctors gave up, said you're going to die in 2 or 3 months. They got prayed for, the Lord healed them, they're still living, see. So when man can no longer do anything, God can intervene. Many times he did.
There's an interesting book out, it's a bestseller, Healing Words by Dr. Larry Dossey, Dossey. I've got it in my room if anybody wants to see it. I should have brought it with me. I'm very skeptical about it. But it talks about the power of prayer and the power of faith. And it's very, I mean, this guy has got all these scientific graphs and everything. But I really do think that there is something to just letting it go and letting see what happened. And just sort of, with letting it go and saying, again, I mean, the value is that I'm going to live. However long that is, however short it is, I'm going to live in a right, what I see as in a right relationship with God. And I'm going to stop all this other stuff, which seems to me to be constantly veering me off the path of what my fundamental values and meaning are. And I mean, my mother was told when I was 15 to live every day as if it were her last.
We should all do that.
Yeah. Well, that's true. There was something there for that, too. But when I was 40, she died. So now I wouldn't have put anybody, anything through what she went through the last few years. But the years leading up to that, she said, those jokers, it was the last time she went and saw a doctor. She went to a health food store and she went to church. And when things were particularly bad, just a little aside, she was born and bred a Lutheran, married to a Lutheran pastor. When things were particularly bad, she went across the street to the Catholic Church. She said, I'll have to light a few candles, you know, because, you know, I'm just not saying anything about Martin Luther, but... But she felt that there were things that were given to her in terms of spirituality and in terms of a sort of an embodied faith that came through sacrament and you know, the physical manifestation of her faith came through in the music and the liturgy and the smell of the incense and the lighting of the candles. Those were very important to her. She was an artist all her life, that she liked those embodied kinds of things. But
I think a person's will to live has a lot to do with it too. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if a person gives up on living, they're gonna die. I mean, it's just the way it is.
Well, what would make you give up?
Quality of life is diminished to zero.
But what would that mean? What would it have to look like?
I don't know. I haven't thought about that yet. But it would seem to me that I couldn't function. I was in a coma, whatever, you know. Although now there's cases of people who've been in coma for months and they come out normally, you know. So what do we do? You know, what do we do about that?
See, the one thing that that I keep meaning that is interesting to me is that the one group of people for whom I have a great deal of respect who argue against the whole idea of a living will or durable power of attorney are the people who are the disabled rights activists who say that there's a presumption on behalf of people who are healthy that when you reach a certain point, life is not worth living. And they want to push a lot on, what do you mean? You know, supposing, say, oh, you know, if I couldn't read, life wouldn't be worth living. Well, supposing I couldn't see at all, but my sister and the kids were there, and I could smell, and I could talk, and I could hear.